This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
So if things felt like they were starting to get going on last week's Blue Moon podcast, think how it's all feeling right now. An eventful Easter weekend saw Manchester City back in control of their own destiny in the title race domestically. And then there was the question of whether they could do it on a wet and windy Tuesday at the Etihad. And that question was emphatically answered on a wet and windy Tuesday at the Etihad, as City had Bayern Munich on toast for large spells of that game. The job isn't done, though. Far from it. We'll preview the second leg of that Champions League tie, where nothing should be taken for granted.
I know exactly what you have to do there. If you don't perform really well, they are able to score one, two, or three. I know that. The players know it.
And we know it too. On top of that, City have to keep the pressure on Arsenal at the top of the table. And it's Leicester up next at the Etihad. We'll hear from Neil from the Leicester podcast Beyond the 90 later on in the show to find out about their season so far. Also on the show, with more sackings in the Premier League than any season before, and with Guardiola perhaps the most secure manager in world football, we're casting an eye back to a time when new managers at City were ten a penny. Sam Roscoe goes on a trip down memory lane to the final months of the year 1996. Plenty to be getting on with then, so let's get the ball rolling. I'm David Mooney, and I'm joined by two City fans, Kieran Murray.
Hello, Blue.
And Chris Higginbottom.
Hello there, how are you doing?
Not too bad, thanks, Chris. Not too bad. You well?
Shall I just be polite and say, yeah, pretty well, thanks.
Yeah, just let's not go too deeply into it, but it doesn't sound like you're all right, if that's the answer you're giving, but we'll accept yes. Kieran, you well?
Yeah, better than Higgy by the sign of things.
Yeah, but at least Higgy, the football must have cheered you up this week because
no end.
I mean, we'll start with the Champions League. We're going to do things a bit differently on this week's show. We're gonna focus on the competitions. So we'll do Champions League first and then Premier League second. Just what I mean in terms of City taking on Bayern Munich, Higgy, you can't have been expecting the result we got, could you?
No. I mean, you know that if we put the sort of performance together that we are capable of, then why not? Why shouldn't we be beating top teams 3-0 at home in the first leg of a competition that we generally don't win? Because we might, you know, lose 3-0 in the next one or 4-0. But, you know, in all seriousness, we're quite capable of doing that. Bayern aren't at their kind of optimum Bayern-ness of, you know, historically. So in some ways it shouldn't be surprising, but obviously you go in there pessimistic. If we'd have come out having lost 2-1 or 1-2-1 and it'd been really scrappy, you wouldn't have been massively, it wouldn't have been like, oh my God, I can't believe that's happened. But the performance we put in, it's one of the best, you know, match performances I've seen from a City side, I think. If you take the opposition into account. Like, trying to pick a man of the match from that, there was about 8 or 9 players you could barely split.
Yeah.
The performances all over the pitch were just absolutely top draw. I mean, Akanji, who I have been, you know, I wouldn't say fiercely critical, I'd say fairly critical, as in critical in a fair way. It was absolutely immense. He had a couple of little moments, but overall he was absolutely superb. Stones, again, just goes from, well, not just strength to strength, but position to position, and with, you know, with ease and aplomb. Gundogan set the tone and the attitude superbly, as he often does. Please give that man a 2-year contract. I was wondering about whether he should have 2 years. Give him 2 years. He could probably carry on the way he does for 4, but give him 2. Bernardo, I mean, he was one of our best defenders. He was one of our best attackers. Grealish looks like a £1 million player.
£100 million.
It was just ridiculous. Like, what an amazing performance. Just absolutely enthralling, compelling, enjoyable. And it's just such a shame it's only half-time.
Yeah, there was. It was funny, Kieran, because I had my own no Vinny no moment in that first half when Rodri took the ball, because I was seconds away, like as he picked up the ball the first time in that move. I was watching on TV, but I could hear the crowd going shoot, 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 and he knocked it outside, and there was a little bit of play on the outside before he got it back and took the shot on eventually. But there was a moment where I almost had enough time to tweet the words, the last thing a game like this needs at a stage like this is Rodri taking an effort on his weaker foot from 30 yards.
He must be a fast typer, by the way.
I wasn't doing it on my phone. I was on my laptop. So there you go. Okay.
Yeah, it was a stunning finish. I don't think Rodri has always set the world alight in the Champions League. Some of his lesser performances have come in that competition, and he's susceptible to a mistake or two. I didn't realise that was his first Champions League goal, and I didn't realise it was his first in, 35 games or 35 attempts or something. So
yeah, he was cruelly denied at Copenhagen, though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
The VAR took that one off him when it really shouldn't have done. But
that's right, yeah. It was a wonderful finish that kind of his performances lately and his performances this season, really. Higgy talked about Gundogan setting the tone, but I think the tone is always sort of set from Rodri. There was a brilliant kind of interview with Bernardo where he said, you know, it was defenders defending and attackers attacking, kind of. It seems like Pep has suddenly brought us really, really back to just the absolute basics, and that's how he's got us ticking and that's how he's got us purring at the minute, by just players doing the basics but really, really, really well, and, you know, players in different positions that you wouldn't expect but doing the jobs and mixing it all up. But Rodri, just everything seems to emanate from him, and what an incredible finish on his weaker foot. I just... There's one angle, you know, from behind him where the curl and the bend on it, and you can see all the faces of the crowd behind the goal as well. And yeah, it just lit up the tie and set us. You know, it was a launch pad for what was to come. It was an absolutely incredible game.
Perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah, just wonderful.
Yeah, but speaking of wonderful, though, Chris, Grealish stealing the ball for the second goal. I mean, first off, second goal where both goals had a Grealish back heel in them, so fantastic anyway. But then Haaland gets the ball inside the box, and I think everybody in the ground was going, shoot, shoot, shoot. And he goes, no, I'm just going to pop this on the littlest guy's head.
Yeah, the big man at the back post. Grealish was just superb all evening. Haaland, there's something so calculating about his decision-making process. Even when it doesn't come off, you can look at it and go, generally speaking, it's the right decision, even if it doesn't work, you know, and it was the right decision there as it played out. Bernardo, what right is he to be getting up there and he put his neck into that, didn't he? Absolutely powered it past him. And then he was at it again, like about 2 minutes later, nearly got to another header. But
he's got four headers for City, which surprised me. I thought, I genuinely thought that might have been his first, but no.
Just a good footballer, isn't he? Does everything well. He's probably to his advantage on headers being so small, because you kind of don't expect that from him. You don't think you need to cover that kind of play from him. But yeah, he knew where to be. And when he got there, he just finished it so emphatically with his head. It was just, yeah, the place went mental. It was great.
Haaland obviously has to get on the score sheet as well, Kieran. Nice little assist from John Stones, but it's almost inevitable now, isn't it? 45 goals, the best return of a Premier League player in all competitions across a Premier League season, that is.
It's absolutely mental, isn't it? Because Higgy just said a minute ago they're trying to work out the man of the match because they were also at the top of their game. And it's weird, isn't it? Because the weak spot, or the one who didn't really do all that much, is Haaland, who got a goal and an assist. It's like, you know, he's barely been involved, and then his involvement is so pivotal and so crucial. And it feels like, I mean, early on in the season when he was getting, you know, a hat trick every game kind of thing, we were using him right then, but all of a sudden it feels like we are set up so well to play to his strengths, and he is just a kind of battering ram at the front of our offense, but everybody else is putting all their strength behind their roles. It's just that was like, because Bayern were decent and it wasn't, you know, there were no kind of standout performers because everybody was a standout performer. So it just left it as one of the most complete team performances. But still, Bayern had a threat, and it was just great to see two big teams going at it. And it was so thrilling to watch. But yeah, what a player Haaland is. It's absolutely wonderful. I think I said this the last time I was on the show. I seem to pinch myself that he's playing for us, and yeah. That, you know, that his season is going as well as it was. All this kind of like the two seasons with a false nine and no striker, and you know, all the kind of like, oh, if City had a striker, and then this is what happens if City do have a striker at 45 goals. It's absolutely obscene.
But even with Haaland, even when, like you're saying, he wasn't, sort of perversely, wasn't hugely involved despite his goal and assist. It's his towering presence, isn't it? I know it's been said before, but it was really evident against Bayern where I was kind of watching from.
They were terrified of him.
Yeah. Exactly. He would make sort of perfunctory runs that he doesn't expect to get the ball played on the end of, and there's three players buzzing around him, fearful, and that allows the rest of the team to play around, you know, to play where he isn't in more space and pick holes and drag players around more easily because there's so many players attracted to the obvious threat of Haaland. It's just like, he's just such a
great. So we do get some of the benefits of the false nine system with that space being created, but we also have the world's best number nine as well.
Yeah, it's a false nine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insanity, like.
Yeah. Right, well, we're going to play a little game now.
Oh, no.
It's time to play Erling Haaland higher or lower.
What is this?
So this one is really, really easy, okay? Erling Haaland, he scored 45 goals for City when they beat... He got his 45th against Bayern Munich on Tuesday night. That means he's level with Nicolas Anelka on the number of goals that they've scored for the club. Haaland did it in 39 games. Anelka did it in 2.5 seasons, or 103 games. So for this one, I'm going to give you a City player. All you've got to do is tell me if they scored more or less than 45 goals for the club. Make sense?
Higher.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
so
makes sense.
You're both going to get to answer this one, but I want opposite answers. So I'm going to alternate who goes first. Kieran, you're going to go first for number one. So Mario Balotelli, did he score more or less than 45 goals for City?
Less
than 45. Higgy, that means you've got higher than 45.
Wasn't his number 45?
His number was 45. Yeah. That's maybe what drew me to him in the first place for this question.
Yeah.
No, he scored 30 goals in 80 appearances. So 1-0 to Kieran. Second player, yes. Higgy, you're up first. Sean Wright-Phillips, higher or lower?
It's got to be higher.
Okay, Higgy's going higher. That means you're lower, Kieran. 47 he got. So Haaland's very close behind, but he is higher. That was 275 appearances. So Kieran, over
Sweep
to you.
Sweep is clear.
Yeah, 1-1, Kieran, over to you. Kevin Horlock, higher or lower?
Lower.
Lower it is. 42 goals in 232 appearances. So 2-1, Kieran. Over to you, Higgy. Paul Dickhoff.
Oh, wasn't exactly prolific. It was in a bad team. It was out a while. I mean, how many seasons did he chalk up? I'd say higher. He must have been there at least four seasons and got to be scoring enough. Oh, yeah, higher.
Higher, that means Kieran's lower, and it is lower. 41 goals in 200 appearances for Paul Dickhoff.
I should have bloody known that. What has he ever done for us?
So, 3-1. Kieran, you can really take a commanding lead now with player number five. It's Ilkay Gundogan. Higher or lower?
Oh. He's been here since Pep's first season, hasn't he? And he was our top scorer in the COVID season. So I will say higher than 45.
Yeah, but not by much. 54 goals he's got. 293 appearances, 54 goals. So Haaland only 9 behind him now. But yes, it's 4-1. Higgy, you need this one. Niall Quinn.
Higher.
Definitely higher. 77 goals in 244 appearances. So I've lost count of the scores. At 4-2 now, I think, maybe? Yeah, let's say 4-2. Yeah. Kieran, over to you. Leroy Sané.
Lower.
It is lower. 39 goals in 135 appearances.
Were there tricky ones for Kieran at any point? Ridiculous.
It's the luck of the draw, I'm afraid, Higgy. 5-2 it is. You've got Edin Dzeko.
Again, it's quite tricky. What was it with those 3 years? 45. I'll say higher.
It is higher. 72 goals in 189 appearances for Dzeko. So that's 5-3. Kieran, over to you. Uwe Rosler.
Lower.
He says lower. It's not lower.
It's got to be 80 odd.
He scored 64 in 177 appearances. So that's 5-4. Higgy, you can pull level with the final question. Darren Huckabee.
Higher.
Oh, he's lost it at the death. It was lower. 31 goals in 82 appearances. There you go.
Useless. Absolutely useless.
Lovely stuff. There we go. Just a little bit of fun and games for to mark how well Haaland's doing.
Thanks, Chris.
It shouldn't hurt that, but I'm slightly annoyed.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
So let's talk properly then about the game, because Higgy, it was a game where it definitely went in spells. There were spells where City were absolutely pinning Bayern back, but there were also spells where Bayern were pinning City back, and maybe they didn't get the chances that City got, but there was certainly pressure either way. What do you think was the difference in the end between City and Bayern? Why were City able to kind of pull so far away?
I've not really got any deep analysis for you. You might be shocked. But I don't know. Bayern seemed to lack like a central focus point up front in the way that we have. They're not quite as scary as perhaps Bayern teams of the past have been. I was very glad to see, for instance, Mane not fit. Or not starting, I'm presuming it wasn't fit, because, you know, he's a world-class player and tends to do pretty well against us.
Yeah, he likes to go against it, doesn't he?
Yeah, seeing him.
He was fit enough to batter Sané afterwards.
Yeah. Yo, the hell was that all about? He's like smashed his face in. Sané was probably their best player and he's whacking him. God knows what was said. Maybe, I don't know, it's all speculative, isn't it? But in terms of the difference, City just, maybe it was the home advantage, maybe it was the tactics, maybe it was they just seemed to have more energy, and just those performances, like we were saying about the man of the match, everyone being at the top of the game like that, you couldn't look at Bayern's team and say, wow, everyone played really well there. And that is testament to how well we played. They're great players that they've got, but
We forced them to not play well. Kieran, it was kind of quite nice to see an opposition team's a quality opposition team succumb to City pressure instead of the other way around for once, wasn't it? Always feels like City are the ones where they go, well, we've got great players, but, you know, Bayern were just too much, or Real Madrid were just too much, or, like, there's always City on the receiving end of that. So it was nice to be on the victory side of that.
That's it. There's just been a combination of factors, I think, that have really played, you know, into our hands. Our form at the minute and the momentum we're gaining is just, you know, keeping us on such a good stead. But everything played into our hands really well. I think the fact that they got rid of Nagelsmann and are in the sort of transitional period of having a new manager, I just don't think it seems to have settled. They seem to be in slight disarray at the moment. Bayern, so they've got that sort of Chelsea-ish complex where they're lacking in their identity, and they're kind of a little bit rudderless and directionless. And that seemed to, like, tell its story on the pitch. Really good players. I think we were after Upamecano a few seasons ago, I'm almost certain, or he was linked with us.
Was that when they got Diaz in the end, do you think?
Possibly, yeah. It was when we were after a centre-back, and by all accounts, he did really well under the previous manager, so he just seemed a little bit confused, caught in two minds, a little bit rattled. Jack Grealish's form and positional play and what he's become as a presser and how he has nailed down that role over there. I mean, when I say over there, I hope you just picture that one spot on the pitch where he seems to occupy constantly at the moment and has just made that corner area. I just picture him at the moment either operating in loads of space or taking people on and doing that kind of sideways run, like parallel with the halfway line, across the box. And John Stones coming out into midfield from centre back as opposed to right back like he was at the weekend or has been recently. There was just City men all over the pitch. It just felt like there was an extra man advantage. And then as Higgy talked about with Haaland making those, you know, deceptive little runs. And then what I thought, like De Bruyne had a good game, but when Alvarez came on, what he offered as well, we were running rings around them. And you know, it wasn't through Pep overthinking. It was just through doing what we've been doing lately, knowing who's in form and who's up for it. And I think Pep's been getting so many calls right recently, and the players are in fantastic form, and it's paying dividends on the pitch, and the results have just been incredible at the business end of the season. It's so you just feel there's a vibe and an optimism around the club at the moment, and Tuesday night was the epitome of that.
Yeah, Higgy, you talked before about Akanji and how well he played. We touched a little bit on Stones before. We can't not talk about, I mean, there was a couple of times where Ruben Dias just basically put his body on the line to keep the ball out of the net. But Nathan Ake as well, like how he dealt with, well, both Coman and Sane in different ways. The fact that the opposition wingers are swapping flanks to try and, you know, get a bit of joy, it just says the fullback's doing well, doesn't it?
Aki's just quietly superb, isn't he? He somehow manages to be like understated yet absolutely fantastic. It's strange. He's good in the air. He's good on the ball. He's strong in the tackle. He's sensible. If he's good going forward, like he's fantastic, and it's a shame on that Laporte isn't in that team, because I think he's a better footballer than Akanji, but he's left-footed, and the system that we're using at the moment is working so well that you'd have to disrupt the actual formation and tactics a bit to fit Laporte in with, you know, Stones roaming, and you can't have, like, you know, too many left-footed players in there. But yeah, Aki's just absolutely superb. People were slagging him a bit when he came, and you know, our fans are becoming a bit too "I want it now" kind of reactionary with players and the bedding in process. And Aki's just gone from strength to strength. He's also a lovely bloke as well, which you know, goes a long way. And as for Diaz, I mean, there was that block where he practically did the splits. And stuck that back leg out.
You do that every week, though, don't you, anyway?
I do, yeah, but it's nice to see other people implementing that skill set.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't even the best of it. It was like, you know, that one that they rave about from Bobby Moore on Pele?
Yeah.
That last gasper in the area where it looked all ends up like a goal scoring opportunity until he timed that perfect tackle, and it's just like, wow, we're in the presence of greatness here. So much of that game, though, you're just like, shit, if I saw this like from one player over the course of a season, I'd be satisfied. We've got like 10 players pulling out the bag every 5 minutes. It was amazing.
I had to. I've got to quote this from Sam Lee, who he said he was a little bit frustrated because this got taken out of his article. So I'm going to give it the airtime it deserves here, because he said that Ruben Dias's tackle on Serge Gnabry was like Bobby Moore on Pelé, but for the motivational meme generation.
Of which I am not one, but yeah, I get the sentiment.
Because Dias is basically a walking LinkedIn post, isn't he? That's what he is. Kieran, what did you make of the receptions for the ex-City player Leroy Sané and the ex-current City player João Cancelo? It was two very contrasting reactions they got.
Yeah, I suppose, is time a healer, perhaps? Because I wasn't overly enamoured with Leroy Sané and the way he left the club. He was great when he was there, but then I don't know if I've kind of memory hold that either, because there were question marks over his attitude, and Pep didn't always play him or, you know, rate him or praise him when he was kind of encouraged to. And he did push for a move. I seem to recall, did Sané move to Munich, like, earlier than necessary, because it was during lockdown or something, was it? Or it was during the kind of restart of the season? And
it was project restart, and he was still rehabbing his injury. And I think he would have been available, but the deal was already done and would go through in the summer.
Yeah.
And he just kind of went, well, okay, then I'll just go now.
Yeah. See, I don't remember being impressed with that. And any kind of star player who's a bit want away, even though, you know, he is kind of wanting to return to his home country and that, and, you know, Bayern's a huge opportunity for him, especially when he wasn't always getting the minutes at City. But, you know, I was a bit disappointed with how Sané left us, really, because I loved him. So maybe time has healed wounds there, and there was a nice reception for him, whereas the Cancelo wounds are a little bit more raw. Yeah. And a little bit fresher, and he's been sort of running his mouth like every other day, it seems, at the moment. Not directly, because he's been quite respectful about Pep and about the club, but I think it's pretty clear that he was a villain in the dressing room, and I don't think it's any coincidence that our form has massively upturned since they kind of rooted that bad apple out.
The vibes are better, yeah.
Vibes are better, yeah, exactly. And he was making bad faces. And if it seems to be sort of an underlying kind of spoilt brat in the dressing room, and you know, you're kind of going on rumour and hearsay, but then he goes to Bayern Munich and openly is a mouthpiece, and, you know, is giving off and kicking off and moaning and whinging, you know, there's no smoke without fire there, is there? So perhaps what he's been saying in the media and the idea of the kind of guy he is just, you know, it required a few boos to get it out of the fan system on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
I've no problem with that, really. I don't think you were that impressed, Higgy, were you, with the boos?
I'm not massively into booing generally, unless it's like a ref.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, the fact is he could come back to us.
I was going to say this, though. Has that now burnt the bridges with him? Or has he burnt the bridges in the way he left?
Well, he's not exactly. I wouldn't describe him as an arch diplomat, the stuff that he's been coming out with. You know, he's a bit of a silly boy. He's gone there, and he's not even in favour there, is he? So it's like, you know, you're basically standing on the last ember of smoking bridge, aren't you? He's burning bridges left, right and centre. He's going to have nowhere to go at this rate. But someone will snap him up. He might go to Madrid or somewhere and do really well, because he's a lovely footballer. But he just seems a bit of a moody arse if he's not getting 100% his own way. And if that starts infiltrating into others in the dressing room, then, yeah, get rid. The thing is with Sané, loads of people still want him back. I don't agree with that either, really. I don't think he's been the same after his injury, although he looked dangerous. He's obviously still a great player. He looked probably Bayern's most dangerous player. But yeah, there's no point in booing Cancelo. I mean, apart from anything else, he's obviously about to come on. Why motivate him?
Yeah.
It's just counterproductive.
There was a running battle, Kieran, between Sané and Edison. I've got to give a shout out to Edison's performances lately, because we'll come on to the Southampton game when we talk about the Premier League in a bit. But obviously, great one-on-one save there. Several great saves against Bayern. It feels quietly like the criticism earlier in the season, he's turned it around.
I've always imagined that criticism just like flows off Ederson like water off a duck's back. You know, I think he's just too mad and wacky to ever actually like consider that or to let it get to him, you know. But whatever's happened with his form recently, it has improved. I think just the whole team seems to be on this path of, success and destruction and everything in their past getting wiped away. And Ederson's just fallen into that. We seem to have a winning mentality, and everybody's inspired and fired up, and he's coming alongside that. It's infectious winning, and there are whispers in the air that we're still heavily and highly involved and, you know, in good favour for three pots in mid-April. So I'm sure you can't help but just kind of be inspired and up for it. And yeah, he was brilliant on Tuesday night. I love him anyway. I think he's a great keeper, because what he does and what he offers us as a club and in Pep's vision, I don't think we'd be the same team without him. His issue's always been kind of shot stopping, and it was brilliant to see him stopping some shots the other night. I think it's one of them, David, where like when you're getting peppered with more shots and yet your concentration has to be on it, and maybe you can help me with this, but as a goalkeeper, like will his concentration be more because Bayern were tricky side who were shooting a lot more, and you had somebody like Leroy Sané who was finding space to get shots away, more so than maybe when you're playing teams who'll have one shot on target, and maybe his concentration dips a little bit like that?
Possibly. I mean, I can't really speak from experience, because every team I've played in tends to concede a lot of shots, and I mean equally at the same time I've been beaten from all angles, so I can't sit here and say yes, the concentration thing, but it's possible. It's certainly possible. I don't know,
like a rhythm thing maybe, like you get with outfield players who, strikers, if you don't get regular football, it's hard to get your rhythm. If you're Edison, you might be getting regular games, but you're not playing much football half the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where this bored Edison moniker comes from, because he's got that little to do. All you had to do was save that one one-on-one where you're completely exposed in the 76th minute. It's like, well, sorry, lads. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. One-on-ones are not easy to save. Come on. Yeah. No. Give us a chance. Yeah.
But he does need to cut out his legging it out of the box at 30 miles an hour with his studs up.
I would agree with that. That's kind of what he seems to have done though this week. It seems to have been like all of the saves he's made, it seems to have dropped into his 6-yard box. Well, yeah, like the Southampton game and the Bayern game, he was taking up a position in his 6-yard box to stop those shots. So he was it was almost as if he was giving himself more time to react to the shot than trying to rush the striker. So I'm quietly confident. Higgy, have a listen to this as well. This is Guardiola from after the game, summing up his feelings.
He's not comfortable at all. Emotionally, I'm destroyed. I have 10 more years today. So, no, it was so demanding game. So now I have to relax and day off. The guys prepare for Leicester again, and after we travel. I know exactly what you have to do there. If you don't perform really well, they are able to score 1, 2, or 3. I know that. The players know it. So it's an incredible result. But we have to do our game with a huge, huge personality. Otherwise, these top clubs of teams. So I had the feeling when they had the first leg in Munich and a bad result quite similar to him. Here, I have our chances. But here in our stadium, we have something special this season. You know, we have our momentums. We are clinical. We have that weapon. It's the same in Munich. So I've been there. You are not been there. I've been there 3 years, and I know what does it means and the people. But of course, we are going to there to score goals and to try to win the game. If we are there just to to do that will be so difficult.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
So we're all here talking about 3-0 and, you know, that what a great advantage that is. He's not taking anything for granted. And in many ways, he underlines that by saying that if City had gone to Bayern and lost 3-0 in the first leg, bringing them back to the Etihad, he'd still feel like they had a chance. So I guess it's nice to hear that they are going, you know, this is not a job that's done yet.
Well, absolutely. You can't afford to be complacent because then you will lose. Bayern are a great side. And also it might hint at the fact that, you know, as we are better than them, because even if they had managed to fluke a 3-0 win against us, we're still better than them and we'd take them apart at our place. But yeah. I mean, you know as well as I do, you can't take it for granted going away in the Champions League to a club like Bayern. And so much hinges on certain moments. You don't know what's going to happen. They could score early, we could get a man sent off, the referee could be a maniac, all three might happen. It's four. So yeah, as long as we start strongly and don't do anything daft, then surely it's ours for the taking. But yeah, no room for complacency whatsoever.
Yeah, Sam Lee, Kieran, he was saying to me that there's always this weird thing in football where immediately after the game, you go 3-0. God, that's an amazing result. It's job done. And then by kickoff on next Wednesday, we'll all be sitting here imagining all the scenarios in which Bayern go through. And we're going, God, it's actually 3-0 is not comfortable at all. The answer's somewhere in the middle there, isn't it? You've got to be careful not to get done. But ultimately, City are they're nearly there. Jake Humphrey on BT said it was it felt like more than half done. So what percentage done is it? Like how much more than half done is it?
I don't know, because that exactly what you've just said, David, is kind of the way my mind will be working. It will be all these horrifying scenarios where, I mean, we've seen big comebacks in the Champions League. We've seen what the likes of Liverpool have achieved, you know, when they were completely written off. The benefit we have is that I think, as I said earlier on, I think Bayern are in a bit of a strange phase transitionally. They're kind of not as clear in the league at this stage of the season as they normally would be. By the sound of things, not all is happy in the camp with Mane and Sané fighting.
And Cancelo's faces, don't forget that.
Cancelo's faces, of course, yeah. There are mistakes in them, as Upamecano demonstrated on Tuesday night. And also, like, City probably will score at the Allianz. Like,
do you think the fact that Bayern have to go for it a little bit probably plays into City's hands there as well?
Because that's it as well, yeah. Yeah. But I was thinking about this the other night, like, and I was going to ask on the podcast, like, has the lack of away goals had anything on this? Because Bayern, you know, probably would have been even more open on Tuesday night at ours if away goals were a thing. So one thing I think is we also got so badly burnt and stung last year at the hands of Real Madrid. So we know what these super massive big clubs can achieve in the Champions League when they've had years of being a traditional elite club in that competition and winning it multiple times. And you know, Pep knows what the Allianz is about and he knows what Bayern can achieve. So even though I do think we are more than halfway and one foot is in the semi-final, we just have to be measured and professional and controlled and realise that anything can happen on these mad nights. And it's City after all. Like, have we ever gone out of the competition at this stage without a madness happening? So you just have to be really on your guard and very, very careful, especially knowing what happened this last season. I think we'll always learn from madnesses, and hopefully next year can go again. And you know, it feels more than ever that this might be our year. I just don't know how to put a quantitative number on it, unfortunately.
Yeah, so maybe not one foot in the semi-final, maybe a couple of toes in the semi-final already. Yeah.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Right, well, let's switch our attention to the Premier League now. City have the opportunity to put Arsenal under pressure again this weekend. They can close the gap to 3 points on Saturday night. That would be on level games as well before Arsenal travel to West Ham on the Sunday. We'll talk about the title picture shortly, but first let's check in with this weekend's opponents. If City are going to continue their title push, they'll need to take advantage of Leicester's poor form. I've been speaking to Neil from the Leicester podcast and YouTube channel Beyond the 90 to discuss their season so far.
This season's been crap. Let's be honest, that's the only word I can use for it. It's been, everything has been awful. The main reason because of it was genuinely down to the manager and the owners not wanting to get rid of him. Now he's gone, it feels like the fan base is healing. I think you've seen it. Again, you're old enough to know, and you're probably, your fans are as well, where you've been in this position. You've been in just the players are not turning up. The tactics aren't working, the manager's being toxic. It's just an awful, and the fan base is toxic, because even when we're in the relegation zone and before Brendan Rodgers was fired, there was, mutual consent, as it was called. There was a lot of things involved there, which were, a lot of the fans there were going, look, give him time, let's see if we can sort it out. And there's some people that go, look, we want him out now. And other people were going, if you want him out, who are you going to get in his place? There was all sorts of horribleness going on in the ground. Now that we've got him out, we've got Dean Smith in, and it's amazing how much the fan base just lifted and united around the team, because the confidence was rock bottom. As you guys know, because it's a very similar team that when we beat you 5-2, again, I have to mention that for the sake of making me feel a little bit happy, because that feels so long ago. We're a similar team played then. We have that similar squad played then that's playing now, pretty much. I
mean, what's that? That's nearly, it's 2 seasons ago that now, isn't it? It was 2020. Yeah. Was that 2021 or was it 21-22? That was 2021, wasn't it?
It might have been. I think after that game, there was criticism over Pep, and then he went on that unbelievable run. And I think he went on to win the league as well.
Yeah.
So since then, pretty much it's the same squad. So we've gone from finishing fifth, eighth, relegation zone. But now Brendan Rodgers isn't a bad manager. He's just, his time was up. Like Mourinho, like Conte, when they reach that limit, that's their time. They can't do anymore. So now that Dean Smith is in, again, I think he's a fantastic appointment. Craig Shakespeare's come back, John Terry has come as in a defensive coach, and the whole atmosphere, from what I've read and hearing from people at the ground, a training ground, has lifted. Now, does it mean we're going to go beat Man City? Probably not. But it's just nice to have a positive atmosphere that the fans can get behind, because the little things have just been missing and it's been so toxic of recent.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that as well, because obviously there's the good old football kind of cliche of new manager bounce and all that sort of thing, which I know a few City fans are kind of thinking, oh, typical City, here we go again, Leicester will have an upturn now they've got a new manager. But it's kind of the fixtures after City, isn't it, that you need to focus on. I mean, you look at the three games after, it's Wolves, Leeds and Everton, and it's like, if you're going to stay up, those are the games you need to win, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we desperately need for this game. Again, coming into this game, the majority of Leicester fans are going, we'll write this one off, this Man City game. It's almost a free hit. If we get a draw, I'll stack my hand off right now for a draw. But we are in a very bad position, because before there was a time where there was only 2 points separating us and 12th. Now there's 8. That's a big difference. So we've just got to pray that we stay safe. Again, you were mentioning that 3 matches after that is where we really, really want to be. but we've just got to hope that we stay up. Dean Smith, but the thing is, as you guys know, as was mentioned before, this squad is good enough to compete for top 10. We are a good squad. We do know how to play good football. Dean Smith just needs to go put his arm around the people, the lads, and go, look, we can play. You are a good team. And we can play good football, because from what I'm hearing as well, we've not had this level of confidence in the training ground since we won since the week before the FA Cup, which for me, hopefully, will be enough to keep them up, because the squad's there, the players are there, the players we've got are fantastic. It's just they've been running to the ground by a manager that just reeks of toxicity, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was going to say what's been going wrong in that sense? Because obviously, if the squad is still there and still good enough, I mean, has it just got a bit stale? Is that another aspect to it?
I mean, stale would be one thing, but then stale wouldn't mean dropping from eighth to the relegation zone. If that was the case, we would be about mid-table and it or 13th, and it wouldn't really be happening. The fact that we've gone from such extremes, it was that we were soft throughout the midfield, the tactics weren't working, other teams have sussed us out. I think in terms of form, if you take the first half of the season, Leicester City would be in the top 10. I think we're eighth. But the amount of times we've conceded this and last season after like 80th minutes, I think we've dropped 22 points from winning positions, 25 maybe. It's been really bad. So the players are there, but they've just not been. They've the confidence in the manager. So every time it will be the press. I feel like I'm going to rant. Brendan Rodgers going on the press conference. He'll praise you the team. He'll basically go, my team's not good enough. I need new players. And he loses the game because the players aren't confident. They go, forget it, whatever. And then he just repeats the cycle. And that cycle is repeating again and again. So do you know what? I'm glad he's gone. I think he's a good manager. He's just got a very short shelf life. And for us, after the four seasons, you see how badly it can go. So I know he's linked to Tottenham at the moment. If they keep for a couple of years, I think he'll do well for them. But his shelf life as a manager is maximum 3 years.
Yeah, just looking at your recent form, then I mean, it's hard to judge going into a game with a new manager and a new feeling around the place. But just looking at the recent form, it's only 1 point from the last possible 24. That needs to change and quickly, doesn't it?
100%. I don't think it'll be against Man City. If we get a draw again, that doubles the amount of points we've got over the last 6 or 7 games. So yeah, it's been woeful. Even when Brendan Rodgers was got rid of the there was only one game, one day of training before we played Villa. And then against Bournemouth, the confidence was still on the floor. But against Man City, look, it's going to be a write-off, I think. However, I think most Leicester fans are feeling like that. We're just happy to get behind a team that believes in themselves. And as bad as that sounds, that shows you how much confidence can do. As you're saying, it's a cliche to say about confidence. But in this case, it means an awful lot to us. It took us from above 10th place and finishing in European spots and just outside European spots to relegation zone. And with a team that, yes, there are a few problems and there will be a massive refresh in the summer, but I'm just praying that we stay in the Premier League. And I'm really excited to see, even if we don't win, just a decent performance for over half the match, because that's the criteria at the moment. Just put up a good fight, just like we did against... because again, if people from Man City fans watched the other match, again, the 1-0 previously, it was a very different game. We played super well. We just, again, KDH had an absolute brilliant free kick, but we played super well. And that was after that, we kind of just went off a cliff. And it's not, I don't think we've gone over 14th the entire season.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like there are many players in form at the moment. Is there anybody that you've looked at in the last few weeks who have gone, you know what, I can see what you're doing. You're at least working hard for the team.
I don't know, really. I mean, at the moment, Daniel Everson. So Danny Ward has been dropped off. One of our academy prospects, and Daniel Everson has come in. He's looked pretty decent. I think you'll see a rejuvenated Leicester City. There'll be certain players to keep an eye on. One of them will be a centre-back, Harry Suter, 6'6", giant of a player. If you think about Harry Maguire, and then I just call him like Harry Maguire XL. He's brilliant. I love him. Another one to Harvey Barnes, I think, will be another player. And also, as kind of a cliche, but I think it's true, Dean Henderson will do what he did with Jack Grealish to get the best out of him for James Maddison. So the couple of players I'm looking at, and another player that, as you guys know as well, Jamie Vardy, I think, is revitalised and ready to go for the rest of the season. for our perspective, it's just about staying safe because the rest of the pack are falling away at the moment. So it's us and Southampton that are just there. But as you guys know, we're not one of the three worst teams in the Premier League. I think that's pretty much clear. However, a change needs to be made. We've made it now. And I just pray that the next four games, we get something. Because if we don't get anything from them, I think that's game over for Leicester City.
Yeah. What do you expect from, or can you expect anything from Dean Smith tactically yet? Or will it be a bit of a surprise for you guys as much as us?
Yeah, so we were looking at this as a fan base, looking at some of the tactics that he's implemented previously. And there's nothing really too much to look into because obviously there's not a lot that we can really judge. But what we see, he plays a 4-2-3-1, be that what you may, a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1. Technically, he defends in a low mid block from what we've seen. And then he'll push on the fullbacks and focus on crossing. So that's what we've seen from, again, the coach's voices, looking at a couple of people that analyse him from before. Again, his time at Norwich didn't end very well, but we're hoping this comes in for the Aston Villa and the Brentford and Walsall before that. So we're hoping for more of the same, but time is running out. Eight games left for us, and we just need to stay safe, whatever it costs.
Yeah, well, Neil, we got the charity back coming up. Give us a score prediction for this game for you. What are you going for?
Oh, God. Right. Well, it depends, because obviously you guys were magnificent in midweek, and I didn't want you to do as well, because I do like Man City, but I'd want us to do well against you, which means resting some of your players, and that's the advantage that we've had. We've had a week off. I'll go for I want to say Man City win, but I have to say a draw. I'll have to say a 1-1 draw for Leicester.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
That's Neil from Beyond the 90. Chris, good Easter weekend for City, all told, really. You know, Arsenal dropping points at Anfield, City, you know, doing the business on the South Coast. It's now back in City's hands.
How has that happened?
Yeah, it doesn't feel that long ago that it was looking quite difficult, didn't it? I mean, five wins in a row for City now as well, the longest winning run of the season so far. It's feeling like things are starting to come together, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's all starting to click at the right time. I just, considering how, you know, everybody, City fans included, certainly Arsenal fans, apart from some of the more seasoned pessimists that still, you know, remember some bad times, but the press, everybody, they really are champions elect, aren't they? Everyone's been schmoozing about it and just lauding them as champions in waiting, and it looked unassailable from our point of view. It's like, well, they're not going to lose. You look at the games, it's like, well, you know, our running looks harder than theirs. They don't look like they're going to drop any points. They keep doing that thing, that annoying thing of
winning,
snatching. Yeah, well, yeah, but winning from what, you know, in the last few minutes where it doesn't look like they're going to, and then you're like, well, that's how you win titles. That's what you keep hearing, isn't it? That's what wins titles. That's also what wins titles. Oh, they've just done that. That wins you titles as well. And yeah, I suppose winning is the broad term for that. But it's the way they've been doing it. It's been really kind of convincing. And then they get one draw and it's back in our hands. It's like, oh, right, okay. Maybe I've been getting swept along in the narrative there. It depends on if they beat us and pull away that way.
Fair play.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They deserve it. I don't think they will. So it's up to us to just win the other games as well. And I think. Yeah, I mean, they're very good.
But the thing with it, though, like City know how to navigate these run-ins, don't they? I mean, the number of times when you think of the Guardiola eras at City, the times when City haven't navigated the end of the season, haven't gone on mad winning runs at the end of the season, they've already been out of the title race. They've not been in an actual race with another club when they've had a little inconsistency towards the end of the season. Every time they've needed to put these runs together, they have done. And knowing that, and knowing how they've been playing recently, like, you can understand the confidence, can't you, Chris?
Absolutely. I mean, Arsenal have not really had that twitchy moment, have they?
Unless Anfield was that, I don't know.
Well, they did want to get a point out of that. Liverpool could have easily scored. I know Arsenal had some chances as well, but some of the chances that Liverpool missed, including the penalty, like they could have been home and dry quite easily. And then I think they really would have been chewing on their undies. But the way we look, and it is that stage of the season, and we are putting that kind of run together, just I think we've got that sanguine aroma in our nostrils, haven't we? It's there. It's there for the taking. We can smell it. And we've got the players who've proved already that they can do it. And the fact that it's in our hands, it's got to be advantage City, hasn't it?
Yeah. Kieran, obviously the other side of this is the performance at Southampton. De Bruyne became the fastest to 100 Premier League assists. Haaland, you know, breaking records every week. There's something about this team kind of achieving those things, isn't there?
Yeah. Higgy's right. It is. It's just that smell in the nostrils. It's a weird one, because when you're at the top of the mountain like we were last season, how can you, you know, kind of ready yourself to climb up again? And they are. This has been one hell of a strange season for City, in that, you know, you've got this absolute like monster of a striker who's come and is just breaking records left, right and centre. And De Bruyne is getting assists left, right and centre, and still we're not top of the league. And, you know, the World Cup presented a really, really challenging kind of break of momentum, and some of the players came back in different moods and different approaches and attitudes. The Cancelo stuff, the Kyle Walker stuff, you know, this season has kind of brought its own challenges. And then all of a sudden you've got a new competitor as well in Arsenal. So, you know, Liverpool have fallen away, United have suddenly fallen away, and, you know, you've got Pep up against one of his old assistants, and it's just, it's brought a fresh challenge to him. And suddenly, as Chris says, we're not letting them go. And if this is their sort of, I think the thing was on Sunday against Liverpool, I think Arteta got it wrong. I think that the substitutions, the time waste and the approach, the tactics, I think he was making mistakes. And at the moment, I mean, touch wood, like Pep doesn't seem to be making mistakes. He seems to be getting every call right. Even taking De Bruyne off against Bayern the other night, like Alvarez come on and suddenly we score two more goals. Like every little thing that he's banking on or gambling on seems to be paying off. And Arteta maybe doesn't have that kind of experience at this end of the season of being the league leaders. And with City still to play them, having beaten them twice already this season, you would have to sort of fancy City's chances. It's crazy to think that that's where we're at, because, you know, a few weeks ago it seemed dead in the water after Nottingham Forest. For some reason it just seemed like, you know, it's not going to be our year, and fair play to Arsenal.
I've written it off.
Yeah.
Just quick word on Haaland, Higgy. Bicycle kick, reckon that's his best goal for City so far?
Yes. What a ridiculous goal. It was sort of akin to some of his upside down foot flingers, where it looks like he's been launched out of a massive medieval catapult and just manages to contrive to stick one limb or part of his body on it. But that was more of a graceful, balletic motion on it. It was just absolutely sublime.
Yeah.
Also, what was it? Was it against Southampton where he was going off the pitch and he took his hairband off? And you got the full Timotei advert.
Yeah.
Someone posted on WhatsApp, it might have been Nico, said like that when his hair came down, the whole pub went, oh. This is just ace.
Yeah, we haven't talked about him shaking Bernardo Silva after the goal against Bayern. See that.
Don't hurt him. Only a little.
It was properly like the Big Show fighting Rey Mysterio or something, you know, like absolutely bear hugging him and shaking him left, right. And the tweet, wasn't it? Somebody said, that's a grown man. So good.
Have you seen Haaland's cornrows this week as well?
Yeah. Yeah, the little cute, like, girly pigtail plaits on this, like, Norwegian Viking robot. It's so mad. A real proper juxtaposition there.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a great video this week as well of Haaland that somebody had obviously taken from a few, like, open training sessions, where it was him, taking part in the rondos, you know, where the players stand around in a circle and pass one touch to each other, and him just kept losing the ball and going absolutely ballistic about it, you know, and getting angry at his own self for losing the ball so often. But none of the other players were paying him any heed at all. It was just, obviously he just doesn't have that in his skill set and he goes mad about it, but all the other players are just getting on, cracking on. It's really, really good.
Yeah. We've not actually talked about Leicester in all of this. So let's have a look ahead to that game. Given the size of the Champions League game that's to come on the Wednesday, Chris, but also given the score in that one, and given your knowledge of what Guardiola does in these sorts of run-ins, you can't expect anything other than almost the same team that played on Tuesday night and full throttle, can you?
Well, I always say it's a fool that tries to second guess Guardiola's lineups. You say, "Oh, you can only expect this." Don't come on now. You're leading down the path there, aren't you?
Yeah.
Of course, you can only expect the unexpected, really, with Pep. Hopefully, he'll overthink it that much that he'll come back to thinking it absolutely spot on and normally again.
But like when, you know, when Pac-Man goes off the left hand side of the screen and comes back on the right. Is that what you mean?
that's a very good analogy. Did you just think of that just then?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've got similar hairstyles as well. So yeah, I see where you've got that.
Yeah, he's fond of giant cherries and big bananas as well, isn't he?
He's a true bird.
Yeah. Yeah. Always chased by ghosts as well. Haunted by his past.
We've all got a past. But it's a bit of a weird one with Leicester though. I mean, the Neil there from the Leicester pod saying how everyone wanted rid of Rodgers, and he used to praise the opposition and say that he needed new players and they want rid of him, and everyone's satisfied when he was out the door and they're happy with Dean Smith. I just find it all a bit weird because he seemed to be saying that the team they had when they beat us 5-2 a couple, 2-3 years ago, he seemed to be saying that, you know, it's pretty much the same team, so we're still a good team, but the fact that it's pretty much the same team means that they've not really invested in players and you can't stand still. Leicester seem to have gone, you know, just got progressively weaker as a team.
And treading water for a bit, yeah.
Yeah, they're not rubbish, but they're not improving constantly, which is, you know, basically means you're going down. In terms of momentum, I don't mean going down relegated, but they're getting worse. So it's a strange one. Maybe Dean Smith's a better manager in terms of managing a limited squad without expecting any big signings, and Rodgers needs new signings for his vision of how to play.
Yeah,
is he a better manager than Rodgers? I wouldn't say so, but I don't know. It's a weird one with Leicester. They seem to have lost a lot of good players, and the result is obvious.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
Kieran, obviously, as Higgy says, their new manager, very little time for them to work on a plan for City. You expect them will probably sit deep and try and cut out the spaces as usual. When they did that at the King Power, they were pretty stubborn and hard to break down.
Yeah, I seem to recall it was a Kevin De Bruyne free kick that got us the 3 points at theirs. And it was a bit of a turgid game that was, delivered in a bit of a low block without the kind of thrill of past games against Leicester, against Rodgers Leicester as well. There was the 6-3 and the 5-2, and at theirs it was always a bit more. They seemed to neutralise us a bit better at the King Power, so. As you say, it's hard because Dean Smith has just come in, hasn't had much time to turn them around. So he'd probably just really, really try to park the bus at the weekend. And hopefully City can just negotiate a way through the way they have been with every team at the moment and keep that momentum going. City are just better than Leicester. And hopefully that shows.
Just got to go prove it now, haven't they? Yeah. Yeah. Right, well, no wins on the charity bet this week. That keeps us on £705 so far for the season. We'll try again with Leicester and Bayern. William Hill has given each of us a £10 correct score single. The winnings are going to the Man City fans' food bank support. They'll be under the bridge by Asda from around 3 o'clock on Saturday as well, so go and see them with a donation if you can. We will start with Leicester. We'll start with you, Kieran. What are you going for this one?
4-1 to Manchester City.
4-1 City is 14-1 and £140 if you're right. We heard Neil went for 1-1. That's 16-1 and £160 if he's right. Higgy, what are you having?
I'm going one better than that. I'm going to say 5-1.
5-1 is 22-1 and £220 if you are right for that one. We'll then move on to the second leg for Bayern. Kieran, where's your money for this one?
I think City might try and keep it tight and it'll be 1-1.
Nice 1-1, seeing City through safely into the semi-finals. That's 13-2, £65 if you're right. I have gone for a 2-1 City win because I think Bayern will have to be a little bit more open in this game, and open teams suit City. So 9-1 and £90 if I'm right. Higgy?
Yeah, similar thinking to you in terms of Bayern have to go for it, sort of a bit more there for us. And I've gone 3-1. I always like to give a nice, positive, juicy prediction.
Yeah, well,
it works, but I'm not really
well, 3-1 if it comes in, 18-1 and £180 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and please gamble responsibly. To get more information on gambling responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. Now then, there have been more managerial changes in the Premier League this term than any other season previously. Pep Guardiola is the fourth longest-serving manager in England at the time of recording, and he's now been the City boss for nearly 7 years. It's a far cry from a five-month spell in 1996 that saw five different people take charge of the club, both on a permanent and caretaker basis. Sam Roscoe's on not-so-happy nostalgia duty this week.
There's probably no manager in world football who is more secure in their job than Pep Guardiola at Manchester City.
I think that the sport directors or the owners take a decision to keep the manager alive or sack him is how he works. Of course, the results are so important, but how he works every day and it was your plan, more or less, it works. And after this question of time...
Guardiola is City's longest-serving boss since Les McDowell, who did 13 years at the club in the 1950s and 60s. With every contract extension, he says he has to feel like he's earned it. But the truth is, City don't want him to go anywhere.
You yourself never been sacked. Is it because you knew how long to stay, where to stay?
No, I would tell you the secret. We will win games. If we don't win games, I will be sacked. It's not because I am... My hair is better than the other ones. I'm not sacked because I win. We win a lot of games.
But he does understand why some clubs change their managers so frequently.
In this country, when I was younger, I always had the tradition to keep the managers, you know. Whatever happened today, with the different owners, with a lot of pressure for everyone, a lot of investment. So, in one side, I understand. So, everyone has a lot of pressure. And always the people believe to change because they believe they'll get better. Sometimes it works, sometimes don't.
The sometimes it doesn't aspect of what Guardiola said there can definitely be applied to City in the mid-1990s. Everything spiralled out of control after relegation from the Premier League in 1996. The manager at the time was Alan Ball, and he would only last three games into the following season. Striker Paul Dickoff was his final signing, and when we spoke to him on the podcast, we asked if that was a period of turmoil at the club.
Well, it is when you consider you sign on the Friday and the manager fucking resigns on the Sunday. I'd already had a couple of managers at Arsenal during the pre-season, and I think it was something, well, it was ridiculous, the amount of managers I had from the July-August time to the January. You know, every new manager comes in, one likes you, one doesn't, but that seemed to happen every week.
Dickoff played in Ball's final match. Replacing him was caretaker Asa Hartford, and, 8 games later, the next permanent manager was in place. Steve Coppell left Crystal Palace to take up the role, but he lasted just 33 days, resigning after 6 matches, saying the pressure of the job was too much. His assistant, Phil Neal, took the reins temporarily for the next 10 fixtures, and then Frank Clark was appointed. That's 5 managers between the 26th of August and the 28th of December in 1996, or roughly one new manager every 25 days. We spoke to Frank Clark on the podcast in 2010.
The biggest thing for me was the supporters, the numbers that we got. When we were struggling in the old, it's now the Championship, the level of support, the quality of support was absolutely fantastic. The rest of it is a bit of a blur, really. It was a difficult job, but I didn't do myself justice there, you know. So it all went a bit sour for me, but the supporters were fantastic, really.
He explained what the situation was like at the club at the time.
I found it very difficult. The club wasn't really united at that time. There were a number of different factions. They had a lot of managers quite quickly beforehand. So we had too many players. We had about nearly 50 professionals, I think, all on decent wages. It was very difficult to move on.
Clark's time at City wasn't a success. He finished that season in mid-table, and the bad form continued into 1997-98.
I wasn't really able to get to grips with it. You know, I steadied the ship when I first went there, and I hoped to take it on from there, but I wasn't able to do it, and that is a major, major disappointment in my managerial career. When you play at a club like Manchester City, the expectations are enormous, are big. You need players with character, and we probably didn't have enough of those. Georgie Kincladdy, who I love, he was a player, a problem I never really solved. I really liked him as a player. If I could have figured out a way of setting up the team to be successful and get the best out of Georgie, I think we could have gone on, but I never really did, and that was my fault, not his.
Clark was sacked in February 1998, slightly more than a year after taking over. He left City in 23rd in what's now the Championship. Joe Royle's appointment didn't halt the slide, and City were relegated for the second time in three seasons. Royle, however, brought back stability to Main Road, overseeing a clear out of players and back-to-back promotions. He spent 3.5 years in the City dugout, and that's an absolute age compared to the tenures of some of his predecessors.
I'm Clyde Tilsley. Yeah, I know. Yeah, balmy night, Barcelona, all that. Yeah, that Clyde Tilsley. You're listening to the Blue Moon podcast. Enjoy.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Sam Roscoe looking at City's managerial changes in 1996. We're going to finish with some audience questions. Get them in for next week on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email us as well through the website bluemoonpodcast.com. In a slight break from convention, I'm going to start for this week. Because one of the places that I work for is Five Live, and on Tuesday ahead of the game, I was asked to look over a script for an item previewing City's game with Bayern. The person that wrote it described the tie as between two powerhouses of European football, and it sparked a discussion around the desk that I was working on about whether City can be classed as a powerhouse. Nobody wants to draw them. They're consistently champions of England. They're regulars in the Champions League, and they're regulars in the latter stages of the Champions League. They're often in the quarters, the semis, but they've never won it. So, Kieran, City, a European powerhouse, what do you think?
See, I think it's a question of semantics, really, isn't it? Like
define it.
Yeah. So, and I mean, I guess that's the question you're asking, isn't it, really?
Like, yeah, it is.
in my head, a European powerhouse is a member of the kind of traditional elite,
but that definitely includes teams that are worse than City.
Most definitely, most definitely. Like City are the best team in Europe in my eyes at the moment, and they have been there or thereabouts one of the best teams in Europe for years and years now. It's just the definition of a European powerhouse. I don't know if that remark suits us as a club. I think we're one of Europe's kind of new kids on the block almost, or like a bit of a bit of a upstart to it all. And we're kind of like, we're a challenge to that traditional elite. And I certainly think we are a powerful club. We're one of the best clubs in the world. But I just don't know if the actual dictionary definition of a European powerhouse is
City.
Us.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Higgy? Because like in terms of powerhouses, as Kieran says, City, one of the best teams in Europe. Like you'd include Real Madrid, you'd include Bayern Munich. But like, could you say Nottingham Forest as two times winners of the European Cup? Could you say Aston Villa, who've not played in the, like two teams that haven't played in European competition for a long time? Like, are they powerhouses? But they've won the Cup, but City haven't.
Well, no, they're not, obviously. They're not even powerhouses in domestic football. I'd say they're more well-kept bungalows of English football. but I don't think you can call us a powerhouse of European football without having ever won it. I mean, we're aspiring to be that, and we're, you know, everything's in place for us to be that. But until we've won the Champions League, you can't call us a European powerhouse. If we'd won five UEFA leagues, you could call us that, but as it is, we're an aspiring European powerhouse. I mean, again, it comes down to define power. I don't really like the word powerhouse ever since the Northern powerhouse term was coined, and what a sham that turned out to be. But for me, Nottingham Forest, two European Cups, are they a European powerhouse? No. City, regularly in Europe, never having won it, European powerhouse? No. City in 3 years when they've won it twice? Yes. But, you know, watch this space.
Watch this space is what you say.
Yes. Yeah. Watch this space.
Yeah. Steve Simpson on Twitter says, have you seen this from TalkSport? What do you think of Pierce's claim that he was sacked because of Shinawatra's takeover and not the team's performance in his final season? If you missed it, this is what he said.
I got sacked from Manchester City when the money come into Manchester City. You know, the Thai owners come
Shinawatra
in. When they come in. And I was feeling sorry for myself and whatever. And I went to see England under-19s the following night after getting sacked because I was taking the under-21s at the time to a tournament. I'd sort of sat in the Walsall football ground and Tony Pulis walked in, booted me. I looked up and he went, "Get your head up, son. You've not managed till you've had three good sackings." And it was brilliant advice, honestly. Yeah. It put every... But you'll be amazed. Even I think I'm pretty thick-skinned. But if you get sacked from a job, you walk down the street and you think people are thinking, "Oh, there's that bloke who got sacked from Manchester City." But no one gives a damn.
What do you reckon, Higgy? Sacked because of the money, or sacked because his team didn't score a goal after New Year's Day?
Well, I think. Well, he said he's sacked because Shinawatra came in with all the money, and to an extent, I think that's right because Shinawatra came in, would have looked at his record, looked at the fact he's got some money to sign someone better and gone, "Yeah, we're definitely sacking this guy." But he's only scored, how many goals in 19 goals all season at home or something ridiculous? He's obviously still feeling a little bit sorry for himself. If that's how he wants to spin it and make himself feel better, then fine. I mean, of course he got sacked through results. Imagine if he'd have been a brilliant manager and won loads of games. Do you think Shinawatra would have come in with all that money, or whoever it was, and sacked him regardless? No, he got sacked because he was crap. Soz. Yes.
Kieran, there's not really much more to add, but 10 home league goals all season. I don't think you don't really have the right to turn around after that and say that that it was a bit of an unfair sacking, do you?
No. I'm sure he realises Goose was cooked no matter who the owner was, really. If your performance is that bad all season.
I actually, now that I think about it, I think he was sacked the day after the season finished, which was a long time before Shinawatra took
over. That's what I was thinking. I didn't even think that the timeline really matched, because I'm sure there was a little while where City were kind of managerless and you didn't know who was going to take the job. And then suddenly the Sven rumour started. Like, I don't even know if his actual timeline is accurate there. It's just his sort of rewriting of history to suit his own agenda, and because he's still, you know, he's still down in the mouth about it. but at least Tony Pulis kicking him up the arse like, and told him he needed to get sacked three times was the advice he needed to soothe himself. Like, if that's the standard...
What a tonic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've not made it until you get sacked three times.
That just, technically means that Guardiola's never made it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there we go. I mean, that's the conclusion that we can draw.
Yeah. Final question for this week comes from Robbie on the emails. He says, you recently did a bit on the podcast about the non-City players that get on your nerves. So how about a nice version of that? Which players do you have a soft spot for that never played for City? No superstars like Messi, though, for instance. So any names that spring to mind that you've always admired but never played for City? Kieran?
Well, I was going to say Isco, but he
I
didn't.
Knew
I
you were going to say Isco, yeah.
Yeah, I'll always see him as the one that got away because, he was so close to joining. And then it was literally every transfer window he was rumoured to be signing for us. So, yeah, I've always had a weird thing about Isco, especially when, you know, there was that picture of him in the City shirt from years ago. But yeah, like I just when I was getting into football in the kind of like mid-90s, you know, I remember really, really liking Pavel Cernicek for Newcastle. He's passed away now, really sadly.
Yeah,
I liked him. I remember there was a kind of like Morten Gams-Pedersen sort of had this cool thing about him that people like me who know nothing about football sort of knew a little bit about him and saw him score a couple of absolute screamers.
He was in a boy band as well in Norway, I'm sure he was.
Oh, right, yeah. There was just this sort of cool, fun, like, well, he's not as cool anymore if he was in a boy band in Norway, but I thought he was at the time. Players like that who just, like, you have a little weird soft spot for, but not really sure why. I like Ravinelli as well. That kind of Middlesbrough side of the mid-90s.
I hated them. I hated a lot of them.
Yeah,
oh, did
me
you?
Too. Yeah. They knocked us out of both cups one year, and I went to one of the games. It was awful. Essen Park.
Whoa. Oh, no. I had a soft spot for Juninho. And, yeah, I quite liked them, weirdly. There was a bunch
of
lads
Tony
from...
Daly?
No. I like Craig Hignett because I'm sure City were going to sign him.
What?
Yeah, he was rumored with us all the time. He was a bit of an early trailblazer for the Isco kind of thing where we were always rumored to sign him.
Oh, wasn't that Mido?
Mido, yeah.
Mido as well, yeah.
Yeah, Higgy, any for you that never played for City that you had a soft spot for?
Well, I said Tony Daly. Used to like him. There's a few players from the 90s. Well, I don't know. Current players, I would say. I quite like John McGinn.
Yeah.
Ivan Toney, I quite got a lot of time for. Not quite sure about his betting habits, but he seems like a good bloke. And obviously, every single West Ham player that there's ever been. And their fans.
Just ahead of this weekend or in general?
Especially ahead of this weekend.
Especially ahead of this weekend.
Ludo McClasco, most definitely.
Oh, come on. What a song.
Yeah. Right, so that brings us to an end for this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Also, thanks to my guests, Chris Higginbottom.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Kieran Murray.
Thank you, David.
Stay tuned for a clip of this week's Patreon show. It's a City Heaven, City Hell edition about games against Bradford City. Sign up to our Patreon page to hear the full thing. We'll see you next week.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
A fan ran on the pitch, pleading, he went straight up to Paul Lake, pleading with him to do something, you know, with I don't know, 15-minute score or something like that. And as far as us fans are concerned, that's what changed him. Of course it's not.
I was going to say, that's going to help, isn't it? Yeah, I've just run on the pitch and go, have you thought about maybe playing a bit better?
Yeah, exactly. Have you thought about scoring a goal? Have you thought about this? But we all talk about Trevor Morley and his part in it. And there's two things that stand out. One, Trevor Morley initially thought he was offside. You know, he thought a flag was going to be waved somewhere. So, again, fine lines and all that. But we also pretend, we sort of forget about David White's part in that. You know, David White did a bit of a run and gave up, got the ball across to Trevor Morley when, you know, prior to that, in that game, things just didn't quite work out for City. So at the end of the game, all the stewards allowed us just to basically go on the pitch. It was one of those great moments, you know, City and Brentford fans were sort of swapping scarves and doing all those positive things that never get in the papers and that. I had my photograph taken on the manager's seat in the dugout. But it was just a great, it's just one of those bizarre great moments, you know.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.